Coming up on the next Fan Up podcast, you're going to hear this.
Is that efficient? Are they effective with that? Should they be changing that? Should they be on first down calling more pass plays like the Minnesota Vikings should have last year because they're running too much and being too predictive? Or like the New York Giants, should they be running more in the red zone because they're being too predictable passing so much?
You're also going to hear this.
You guys, I can't. Oh, fantasy player.
The Drew Brees one is crazy, though. I mean, the Drew Brees pick is totally nuts. Yeah. I mean, I'm not even sure if you want Drew Brees this year at all.
What are you talking about? And apparently I'm nuts for saying that. I don't get it, but sure, whatever. Am I? Let's find out right now.
Listen. Hello. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the definitive edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Why did I say definitive? Because I said it in an outtake earlier. I'm Pod Vader, and I am joined by three of our super fans here to bring you the By the Fan, For the Fan podcast, previewing and recapping everything that happens in the NFL. And I will bring those three guys in right now. One of our Thursday regulars, it is our Steelers super fan, Greg. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Jay. How's it going?
It's a fantastic, wonderful day. You can tell I'm using my thesaurus, so I don't use exciting. and we have our other regular on Thursdays, Justin, our Seahawks superfan. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Jay. Hello, fellas. Very excited to talk football today.
Awesome. And one of our new guys who actually made his debut on our Sunday podcast, but will now make his Thursday debut. It is our new Ravens superfan, Big Don. Hello, Don.
Hey, Pod. Glad to be back on here with you guys. And it's getting closer and closer to real football season, so I'm getting excited.
We are literally 4 days away from training camp opening in the NFL, and that's always exciting times because we will definitely have news to cover, which as we discovered as we started today, that we didn't really have that much to talk about. But we do have quite a few things that we want to share with the fans of the NFL today, including some retirements, some thoughts on free agents still available, and a few other news items. Also, we'll be joined by guest Warren Sharp. He is from sharpfootballanalysis.com. He wrote a great 2016 football preview book, which I highly recommend. I'm holding it in my hands right now. There you go. A little sound effect for everyone. And it's fantastic. And we're going to be talking to Warren in just a bit here. But what I want to start with is an email. Gentlemen, this is from Jared, who also included his phone number. Thanks, Jared. We won't be calling today, but maybe, you know, another time. You never know. He sent this email to us, nextfanup@gmail.com. Hey, Pod Vader and crew, I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I'm a friend of your Seahawks superfan, Justin. Justin, you know any Jareds? Can you confirm this is a friend?
Yes, I can absolutely confirm that he is a buddy of mine and a huge Seahawks fan.
Well, I wanted to get some things off my chest that I constantly think about when you guys are discussing things. First of all, you have a lot of Rodgers haters on your program, Aaron Rodgers, and they're absolutely wrong in every way. You only need to look at the stats to know he's the best quarterback and will probably go down as the most accurate passer ever. Here are some stats. Aaron Rodgers' lifetime passer rating is higher than both Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, two Hall of Famers in most people's minds. By the way, I'd like to meet the people who don't think Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are Hall of Famers, because they're idiots. He is one of two players with a regular season passer rating over 100 in the history of the game. The only other player is Russell Wilson, and Rodgers has a higher passer rating than him. Postseason, Rodgers' passer rating is fifth best all time in NFL history. All time. Guess who throws the least interceptions based on total throws? Aaron Rodgers is in first place all time in NFL history by a wide margin. Aaron Rodgers still has a long career ahead of him and already ranks 17 on all time touchdowns in NFL history. Just like my fourth point, Aaron Rodgers is 35th all time yards thrown in NFL history. after this season, if he remains healthy, he should be near the top 20, if not in the top 20. Aaron Rodgers' touchdown to interception ratio is more than twice as good as Joe Montana and is by far number one overall. So again, Aaron Rodgers isn't very good. He isn't the best quarterback right now. What kind of Kool-Aid is everyone drinking? Also, I think Andrew Luck will be a far better player and a Hall of Famer over the next few seasons, but this rant went a little long, so I'll save that for another email. Thanks, Jared. I really wish Neil, who's our other usual Thursday regular, was here to take his lumps, because I believe this email is in direct correlation to Neil's thoughts on our preseason prediction show. Or was it preseason, postseason prediction show? I forget. It was the 3P show. Go and check it out on iTunes. Where he said, is Aaron Rodgers overrated?
Yeah, and if you recall that show, I came to Aaron Rodgers' defense as well for a lot of the same reasons that Jared mentioned. I mean, if you just look at sort of the efficiency statistics, he crushes pretty much everybody of all time. He's at the point in his career where he's going to, in just a couple of seasons, absolutely shoot up the leaderboards. He's kind of at that point where a lot of people's careers ended in terms of yards and touchdowns. And so he's going to end up really, really high up there really, really quickly. I think if there's a knock against him, it's the fact that he's only got one ring. I'm very clear on the record thinking that that's an overrated statistic to rate how good a quarterback is. But I think... I don't think it's crazy to say that when he hangs him up, he's at least in the conversation for the best that there ever was. I wouldn't mind seeing him get a few more rings just to kind of put that sort of goofy argument to bed. But I think Jared is spot on here.
I think I agree with, and I'm also one of the guys that came to defense of Aaron Rodgers on that podcast. But when you start throwing all this all-time stuff, let's get one thing straight. And I know like our buddy M-Dub thinks that Rodgers is going to be the all-time greatest quarterback. Until you pass up, you know, like you can't play in the same era that Danny Marino played in and put up the yards that he did and the era that he did. So it's going to be really tough to have anyone above him. But I think the point is true that Aaron Rodgers is the best that we have today in all facets of the game. And to not credit him or to question that he's the guy you want to have if you have like a game that's going to determine if you live or die, I want Aaron Rodgers right now.
I will tell you, I'm holding Warren Sharp's book right now. I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers' passer rating for different situations. His first down rating, when he tries to go deep to the left or to the right, at least in 2015, his passer rating is below 55. Actually, 55.3 deep to the left, 46.8 deep to the right. Now, we'll give him a little bit of a pass as he lost Jordy Nelson during the season. But his first down rating when he tries to throw deep, not very good. And honestly, when he's going short, it's only 85.8 to the left, 75.4 to the right, and 100 in the middle. He does best trying to throw deep in the middle on first down. So maybe Aaron Rodgers this season will throw it a lot more down the middle deep on first downs. Probably.
Yeah, not. I mean, if you want to read behind that stat, if you're throwing deep on first down, if you're throwing deep on what's typically a rushing down, then you need a good running attack for that to be effective. He didn't have that really last year. I'd love to see what his stats were on play action passing. I'm sure it was below what a lot of other players were. I don't really put that on him just based off of what they were getting out of Eddie Lacy last year. If I can go on sort of a tangent real quick, with your permission, Pod, I think that there's a distinction between best and greatest, if that makes any sense. Like, I think that you could make the case that Aaron Rodgers is the best. Or even maybe another debate, I think that you could make a case that on sort of play-by-play mechanics of quarterbacking, in my opinion, I think Peyton Manning was maybe better than Tom Brady. But when it comes to things like big moments, big Super Bowls, when kind of the chips are down, sort of those moments for that we consider great moments, I think Tom Brady pretty much crushed him in those categories. So I just kind of want to take a moment and say that I do think there's a distinction there between the best and the greatest. maybe another example would be, you know, that Miracle on Ice hockey game where I think it's clear that the Russian team was better than the U.S. team, but the U.S. team was greater that day just for rising to the occasion and sort of overcoming. And I think if we're going to sort of split hairs between the two, I would be fine seeing maybe Aaron Rodgers remembered as the best quarterback ever, but not the greatest ever.
Don, you've been kind of quiet on this. Where do you fall?
I mean, just seeing as many Packers games as I have, I mean, I haven't seen every single one, but just I've never seen a guy like, you know, he's never had a stellar offensive line throughout his career. Just as cool and calm. He can move around, but he's not like a running quarterback where he takes the blows. I mean, he can dance around, make things move, and just like throwing a guy like that throwing on the run and just making like a beeline pass, you know, like over the shoulder catch to Jordy on the sidelines while he's like scrambling out. Like, I've never seen anybody throw like that. You know, I've watched every time he's played the Ravens, and he's never lost to the Ravens. And just seeing him time after time, I mean, you look at the Hail Mary for Detroit this year was a good example. The Hail Mary against Arizona in the playoffs this year. He doesn't turn it over. He doesn't make stupid throws. He's just, he may end up as one of the best of all time. I mean, I still think he needs more Super Bowl wins to be able to be considered the greatest, in my opinion. I mean, you know, Peyton Manning ended up with two, but I still would take a guy like Montana or Brady over him just based on Super Bowl wins, but he's definitely making a good case for himself. I think he's, 31, so you figure he has 5 or 6 more prime years, hopefully, where he can just, you know, really cement his legacy.
All right. So, thank you, Jared. That's exactly what we want from our fans of the Next Fan Up podcast. Send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com, and we'll get into a debate about whatever topic it is in the NFL that you want us to talk about. And frankly, it doesn't even have to be the NFL. You could send us a debate about super rock gods, like Jason Fitz was talking to us about him meeting his idol, Richie Sambora, part of the super rock god group Bon Jovi. So send us any type of email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Guys, I'm super excited. Darn it, I used the word. Didn't mean to, but I did. I'm very enthusiastic about our guest, Warren Sharp. So I want to get to that interview and play that for our listeners right now. So hang tight. Here's my talk with Warren Sharp. It's my pleasure to bring in our very special guest. You know, this time of year, we're starting to get a little bit closer to the preseason. You've checked out our division previews. You've listened to the preseason, postseason prediction show. And so as we get closer and closer to the preseason, we want to bring you even more guests that have their thoughts and share their opinions about the upcoming season. But you know me, and you know my background, and you know where I came from at that four-letter network and how I always used to go to the stats. But I also used to tell you, be careful, because I can make the stats say whatever it is I want them to say. And this guy that we have coming on now knows a lot about stats. This guy has been doing this for quite some time now, and with... I got to tell you, I'm holding his book here, Warren Sharp's 2016 football preview. And Warren Sharp is our guest from sharpfootballanalysis.com. And Warren, if you've got a stat that you want to ask about, it's probably in this book.
Yeah, thanks for having me. First and foremost, happy to join you guys and break the season down. This book, I hope, is going to be a breath of fresh air to some people who are looking at the season and trying to figure out what might happen, what these teams might look like, because so many previews out there focus a lot more on the past. They focus on statistics from the past and, you know, past 3 years, 10 years, et cetera. What I tried to do with this one is present this information in a very focused manner to try to get the understanding of how these teams are built from the ground up, from the GM and the owner all the way down to, you know, the actual roster construction, how these teams have evolved since last year, and then where I think the coach is going to take them this year, but where I think that the coach should take them in terms of improving on some inefficiencies. And there's a lot of basic stats that you have seen out there that a lot of people use. And then there's also some custom analytics that I invented and created and utilize myself that are throughout this as well, that I think are very efficient ways to measure success in the NFL. And I've incorporated those in here as well.
So you mentioned here in the beginning that this isn't a football betting publication. It isn't a daily fantasy preview magazine, and it's not a historical almanac. So what exactly is this book?
Yeah, I wanted to give people, most of those other publications that you just mentioned are extremely high level. They don't talk a lot about the team. And what I wanted to do is break this down to every single team as they currently sit this year. What are they good at? What are they bad at? What do they struggle with? What do they succeed at doing? And how these different parts on this team are going to project towards the upcoming season. And so what I've tried to do is share information on the personnel and the roster construction, share information on the schedule, their tendencies from an offensive coordination standpoint and play calling, and then looking at a lot of visualizations and advanced elements. The reality is, as you're flipping through this, hopefully you'll see that this is not a newspaper. This is not a book on tape, a book that's just black and white text. This is full of color and information because I think people are visual learners. I think people in this era with the smartphones and iPads and TV and computer screens, everybody's got multiple computers now, computer monitors, and everybody is short attention span, but they need to learn about these teams quickly. They need to quickly be able to figure out what this team's going to look like and how they're going to perform this year and how they got to this point from where they were last year and in as quick a manner as possible. And so I think that's why the visual elements that I've incorporated here should help people process that information quickly. And also, it's a lot easier to retain those types of things. Things just, you can picture them back in your mind, how they looked, as opposed to trying to remember, black and white paragraphs of text and things of that nature.
So what are some of the stats that you look into when you're doing a project like this? What are some of the things that you're looking at that tell you, hey, I think the Seahawks are going to be a pretty good team this year?
Well, one of the first metrics that I guess if we're going to talk individual statistics is a metric that I created called early down success rate. And I created this a few years ago and have been utilizing it in some of my models, and it's done something very extraordinary. Not only does it correlate well to victory, which obviously turnovers do better than any statistic out there. 79% of the time that you win the turnover battle by any number of turnovers, you're going to win that game. Obviously, the more turnovers you get, the higher that percentage is going to grow. But that's the best correlation to victory of pretty much any statistic. But early down success rate not only correlates extremely well to victory, close to turnovers and better than most other commonly used statistics, but also it is very, you can use it proactively to predict and forecast things into the future as well, based on how strong a team is in this particular metric. And basically what it looks at is how often you're able to avoid third downs, because so much of what we hear on TV and what we see on the graphics that they splash up there is what a team did on third down. This is the money down. How well did they perform on third down? And the problem is that by flashing up a statistic like that, that team is in third down, and that's a down that you want to avoid. And if you avoid it frequently enough, you're going to have tremendous amount of success. Or if you force the opposing offense into it as a defense and you force them into it, you're going to have a lot of success. So early down success rate is one of the metrics that I created that you'll see mentioned throughout this. Every single team, I show what they did offensively and defensively. So that's definitely a key metric. And of course, I like to look at play calling tendencies and coaching and situational playing. So there's a lot of that in here as well. Statistics that look at how often a team is likely to call a run play. And then I dive into that. Is that efficient? Are they effective with that? Should they be changing that? Should they be on first down calling more pass plays like the Minnesota Vikings should have last year because they're running too much and being too predictive? Or like the New York Giants, should they be running more in the red zone because they're being too predictable passing so much? So there's a lot of things that I like to look at from a play calling perspective as well.
That's interesting. I love the fact that you threw out those particular teams. I mean, is there another team that perhaps goes against what all your research shows you? I mean, is there any team that sort of the stats are lying about?
Well, there's a couple of interesting teams, one of which I'll mention first is the Denver Broncos. If you look at the Denver Broncos and you look at this team and you know what they were last year, you know that they're a team that struggled tremendously on offense. They did not have the production out of Peyton Manning. Then Peyton Manning got injured. And so Brock Osweiler had to step in, and he wasn't all that tremendous. And that's one of the reasons why, despite them having okay success on the scoreboard, they decided not to retain him because they didn't want to pay that level. I was very happy that John Elway decided to make that move. It was a bold move. It's a move that not a lot of GMs would want to do, or owners possibly would want to do. They would want to keep the guy they drafted, who they've kind of coddled and brought up to be this heir apparent. And they decided, we're not paying you this much because we don't think you're worth it. But anyways, digressing back, the Broncos passed the football in one score game 63% of the time. That was sixth most in the NFL. It was more than what they did in 2014. They averaged 4.2 yards per carry on the ground and only fumbled the ball five times. When they passed it, it was 6.2 yards per carry, but they had 23 interceptions, 8 fumbles, and took 39 sacks. So I was surprised, looking at these numbers, how often they still wanted to keep the ball in Peyton Manning's hand, to let him dictate the way the offense is going to go, even though they were struggling so much in that metric. I think they're going to run the football a lot more this year, with that quarterback situation being the way that it is, whether or not you have Paxton Lynch or Mark Sanchez quarterbacking that team. And then another team that I guess we could talk about briefly is the Dallas Cowboys, because one of the most key metrics that I like to look at, because I'm big on efficiency in general, and I care a lot about how efficient a team is. The most efficient way to convert a first down out of all the downs and distances, out of all the types of pass or run plays that you could have, all those combinations, is second and short running the football. There's a ridiculously high conversion rate when you run the football on second and short. It's the easiest time to convert a first down. And a team like the Dallas Cowboys last year, we already know Tony Romo got injured. He wasn't there. So they didn't have a great passing game. So you would think the defense would key in a little bit more on the run game. This is a team that only won 4 games last year. They obviously didn't have DeMarco Murray anymore last year. So they had their running back situation was a little bit more, with Darren McFadden, a little bit less known, so to speak, less powerful, less potent. They still had a great offensive line, however, but on second and short, they converted those into first down when they ran it 94% of the time. It was the best in the NFL. And so here's a team where, even with just based on a good offensive line and a strong play calling game on second and short, they were getting a lot of first downs that way. And I think more teams need to attempt to do that, but it speaks just to how play design and solid blocking, coaching up your offensive line, obviously they have talented players there as well, can turn, potentially third and short situations into first downs. And that's a big deal. And so many teams, sorry for rambling on this one, but so many teams decide, I'm going to chuck the ball deep on second and short. I got right, 8 or 9 right. yards on first down. It's a time for a shot play. And the announcers come on and they're basically prodding the teams and readying all the listeners across the nation. This is a great time for a shot play, Jim. And the problem with that is that you take a shot play on second and short. Number one, the turnover rate is pretty high on those plays. But number two, it's incomplete, which a lot of those end up being. The defense has time then to substitute on a short yardage package to try to stop you on third and short. And if you just chuck the ball down the field on second and short, odds are most teams decide that they're going to run the ball on third and short. The statistics show that it's a lot harder to convert on third and short than it is on second and short. What teams need to do more often is get up to the line of scrimmage quickly with tempo and proper cadence and run with the personnel they have on the field, a very basic run play. Most teams are always going to have a running back on the field, at least one, at pretty much for the majority of their offensive snaps. Allow him to run the ball, allow the quarterback the option to keep it if he sees something that he likes, but it's so efficient just to quickly get a first down that way. And I think more teams need to implement that. And Dallas basically showed that even without a quarterback and even with a mediocre running back, it's still possible to do that.
You know, before we started the podcast, we were talking about some of the other aspects and some of the other things that you've been involved with. You did a lot of research about the Patriots fumbling or lack thereof when Deflategate first inflated itself on the scene. Sorry, I had to do it. Have you done much research into the success rate of Tom Brady on those short run plays? Because everyone says it. I mean, Brady appears at least to be the guy who's most successful on those quarterback dives. Is there any sort of stat that you might have? I know this is going a little bit off the book here, but any sort of stat that you have that sort of explains that?
Well, it's interesting. First and foremost, he is very good at the short yardage situations, getting up to the line of scrimmage and using his cadence as well as, I mean, for the most part, it's the three blockers directly in front of him that are putting in all the work on those plays. Like the rest of the guys typically aren't doing much because Brady's going right up the gut when he's doing this. It's what he sees from the defense. And that's what I think so many coaches need to allow their quarterbacks a little bit more freedom. So many of these coaches want to rein in these quarterbacks, especially some of the younger ones, to kind of fit with the program. But that's handcuffing that offense, because oftentimes you are on the field. Anybody who knows this playing sports, you're on the field and you're seeing something and you have a second to react or 2 seconds to react, whether the defense is out of alignment, whether you can use your pre-snap motion to get somebody out of position and call a play the opposite direction. There's a lot of things that you can do that have to occur in a short amount of time. And Tom Brady has that confidence from Bill Belichick to make any type of read that he needs to at the line of scrimmage. That's one of the reasons why he is so good, because if the defense was crowding him there at the line of scrimmage, if he didn't go fast and fast enough, let's say, and the defense was able to get a short yardage package in there and stand him upright at the line of scrimmage, Tom Brady's probably not going to call that short yardage sneak. The reason why he's so good at it is because he calls it when he thinks it's going to work. And typically he's very accurate in what his pre-snap read is going to be for that from that perspective. I will tell you that, oddly enough, the New England Patriots on the run game were very inefficient, not from Tom Brady's perspective, but from the running backs in converting second and short runs into first down. They actually only converted 55% of them. I just mentioned Dallas was 95%. Patriots were at 55%. That was 29th in the league last year. So they could get a lot more first downs if And obviously what a first down entails you to do is three more downs at least on offense, unless you turn the ball over, of course, and closer to the opponent's end zone. And both of those things are positives if they just do a little bit better from the running game and the running backs in terms of converting on the short yardage plays. They had some offensive line injuries, of course, last season, and I expect that they'll have hopefully a little bit better health this year, but that is something that they could improve on specifically. But Tom Brady, you're right, is absolutely brilliant when it comes to that.
Oh, and I'll tell you too, that offensive line and the reliance on that smaller receiver type back doesn't necessarily lend itself to big run plays as much as it might, you know, a quick screen pass or that quick dump off wheel route. But again, you're going to take me way off track. We'll make this Patriots Today really quickly if we go down this route. So let's come back and look at some of the other things that you have here in your book. You know, one of the things that I do every season is I go through the admittedly pointless task of picking a winner and a loser in every single game for the upcoming NFL season to sort of get my gut reaction picks to how I think the season might go. And I admittedly over rely on past performance, and there's clearly no way to predict if, you know, there's going to be a severe injury that's going to affect the result of the week 10, you know, matchup. But it is interesting that even doing that and then looking at what you have and what some of the other sites have, that we all seem to fall on the same teams as being sort of the favorites coming into the season. We're all looking at, you know, Pittsburgh, New England, Green Bay, Carolina, Seattle. And I want to talk about Green Bay here for a second, because as I look at Green Bay, I see them as having quite possibly the easiest schedule upcoming, although your numbers don't necessarily say it's the easiest. It is one of the easiest, but not the easiest.
Yeah, if you, well, first and foremost, getting back to some of these teams and the projections, I think in general, the odds makers in Vegas, I incorporate that information throughout this publication as well, in addition to a model that's run over at NFLproject.com, which is incorporates some of that odds related information and a lot of other metrics into predicting the upcoming season, and it predicts what playoff seed teams are going to be and that sort of thing. You know, it's really looking at a handful of teams that have a great shot this year. I mean, everybody talks about the parity in the NFL, and that may end up being the case later on through the course of the season when we see injuries or we see some teams who overspent in free agency that actually paying off, because usually that does not pay off. It actually works in the inverse, and it's more of a detriment. Teams who go, you know, crazy in free agency end up not really helping themselves, whereas teams that build intelligently through, you know, comp picks and things of that nature, like the Patriots, like the Steelers, like the Packers, like the Seahawks, these are the teams that end up doing the best overall. So yeah, I think that there is a disparity. A lot of the divisions, like for instance, if you look at the AFC South or the NFC East, certainly there's going to be a team that comes out and wins that division, whether it's the Dallas Cowboys in the East or the Colts or the Texans in the South. But the level of separation that they have with the rest of the conference is the rest of the division is extremely narrow. I mean, you could easily see the Giants possibly fight their way in there with the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Redskins are going to take a step back because of their difficult schedule. But, you know, and especially in the AFC West, where you had Denver run the table last year, win 12 games and win the Super Bowl, they're going to drop back a little bit to earth. The Chiefs are going to be really close neck and neck with them. So these teams just don't have that level of separation and ability to confidently say, we're going to win the division, we're going to make the playoffs, and therefore we've got a really good shot to win it all. Whereas a team like the Patriots or the Packers or the Steelers or the Panthers, these are teams that are going to be fairly confident that they're going to win their division and that they could then, you know, have a great shot in the postseason. So with regard to the Green Bay Packers specifically, I 100% agree that first off, with their schedule, you were mentioning their schedule, they do have a very easy schedule of opposing defenses. If you look at the opposing defenses that they face based on their rankings last season, they face the third easiest schedule of anybody in the NFL this upcoming year of defensive efficiency opponents. If you look at what they were last year versus this year. Now, we know that there's some problems doing that. It doesn't translate exactly. And you mentioned how sometimes you overweight what a team did last year when looking at this upcoming year. So you take it all into consideration, but I built a tool at my website that allows people to choose whatever metric they want to look at, whether it's passing efficiency, rushing efficiency, yards per pass, and look at their opponents' rankings from the prior year based on that metric and how it stacks up with the rest of the league. But overall, the Green Bay Packers, if you're looking at their quote unquote, what I call their true strength of schedule, I have them playing the 28th rated schedule. So one of the easiest in the NFL overall, and certainly one of the easiest for their offenses. The way that I rank schedule is I don't look at prior year's win-loss results, because I think that's just pure fallacy to look at 2016, predicting how hard a team will have it in 2016 based on what their opponents did in 2015. That assumes that Tony Romo goes out after a few games. That assumes the Carolina Panthers go 15-1. These things aren't going to happen this year. So the way that I make my strength of schedule, which is obviously littered throughout this preseason publication, is based upon the Vegas odds, what the odds makers are setting these various teams' win totals are at for this year, and looking at how these teams stack up against opponents based on what those opponents are projected to do this year. And based upon that, I do have the Green Bay Packers facing a very easy schedule. And diving a little bit deeper into the Packers, I like Aaron Rodgers' potential this year. I knew something was wrong last year. He ended up getting knee surgery, you know, right after the season ended. There was pretty ho-hum about what that was and, you know, oh, it was just cleaning something out, whatever it was. But nobody's going to get a knee surgery unless they actually need it. So potentially that was affecting some of his play because he wasn't playing great. His receivers, obviously, he lost Jordy Nelson. And when you got a quarterback who needs offseason knee surgery and you've got a your best wide receiver takes the top off and is really reliable, who misses the entire year, you are going to struggle. Yet even despite those, both of those things, the Green Bay Packers were able to win double digit wins last year. They went on the road against the Washington Redskins and won that game. So in the postseason, so I think the arrow is pointing high on the Green Bay Packers this year. I think that they're going to be one of the best teams in the NFL.
I think so too. Let's talk about a couple of teams that are right in the middle. It seems to be everybody's darlings to talk about. But one team going in one direction and another team many people feel are going to have sort of a come to Jesus moment this season. And I'm talking about the Raiders and the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm seeing a lot of people talk about the Raiders with, you know, the potential to go into the playoffs, and the Jacksonville Jaguars are sort of coming back down to earth. How are you seeing these two teams?
Yeah, the Oakland Raiders, they have a very easy schedule early. You know, I've been studying the Raiders a little bit from what people have been asking me from a daily fantasy perspective element. And the Oakland Raiders, their schedule early is like I said, fairly easy. I think Carr should get off to a pretty good start. The concern that I have for the Oakland Raiders is as they go along, their season gets obviously much more difficult. You know, they literally face potentially three of the best defenses in the NFL. The Broncos, the Texans, and the Carolina Panthers in three consecutive games. There's a bye in between there. Then they have the Bills, and then they have the Colts again. The Bills, and then the Chiefs. So there's another really good defense that they have to face. It's going to be tough down the stretch for this team. I think that they're going to rely a little bit more on the run game. They're going to be able to do that because their defense, who they, you know, that's where they overhauled things a lot in the offseason. That's where they brought on a number of players. I think the move to grab Sean Smith away from the Chiefs and bring him into the secondary and add Reggie Nelson, who is a really good player for the Cincinnati Bengals with a lot of, you know, experience getting to the postseason, a leadership role there. In addition to Bruce Irvin coming off the edge, to partner with Khalil Mack, it's going to be a very formidable defense to go up against. So I don't know that the offense is going to have to do a whole lot, especially with a great offensive line that they have. Murray can run, have many more opportunities to run the football there. The interesting thing about the AFC West is that the last 2 years when these teams have played their divisional games, and I mentioned the AFC West is one of those divisions where there's not much separating the teams that are likely to win this division. Right now, the model is saying the Chiefs are 36% chance and the Broncos are 33%, with the Oakland Raiders, the third team there, just below that. And if you score 21 points, you would have gone in division 20 wins and only three losses. One would have been a tie the last two seasons playing divisional games. It does not take a lot to win games in the AFC West. The NFL average, I think, is like just over 23 points per game. So even if you just scored 21, you would have won 20 out of 24 games. That's pretty substantial. It's the most of any division in the NFL the last couple of years. So that division, it's very important to play solid defense, to not commit game-deciding turnovers or problems in the fourth quarter, and to have clutch play late in games. And so I think if the Oakland Raiders are able to do that and they don't put too much pressure on Derek Carr, I think his prospects could be high this year. But I think that they're a team that could be very interesting and could play themselves into a lot of close games thanks to that defense. With regard to the Jacksonville Jaguars, that is a team where I think their defense is coming along, but they didn't. And they certainly added a lot this past offseason as well in terms of what they spent in free agency to bring in a number of players that I think they overspent, potentially getting a Super Bowl defensive tackle like Malik Jackson in there. But they brought in a number of pieces. The thing for the Jacksonville Jaguars, we know that their offense is extremely potent. It may not be the most efficient, but it's very potent. It has a lot of big play potential and ability there. The key, I think, for them is a lot of people have this over expectation for what Blake Bortles is based on what he did last year and some of the touchdown numbers and stats that he was able to put up. But he did a lot of that late in games in garbage time or when his team was down 9+ points. I think 45% of all of his fantasy production actually came when his team was trailing by 9+ points. And 45%, that was the most in the NFL. His team was only not trailing by 9+ points on 32% of their offensive snaps. So his variance there of plus 12%, his own production versus team snaps was the most in the NFL. I don't think he's going to be in that situation this year. Kind of like Carr, I think he's going to have a better defense in front of him that's going to help keep games a little bit closer. And I also think that the AFC South is a division where all these teams are going to play tight together, just like the AFC West is. I don't really see the Colts being, you know, the head of the class by a large margin like they have been in some years past, and the Texans as well. So I think this division is going to be bunched very tightly. I'm very intrigued. The biggest thing that I'm intrigued about with the Jacksonville Jaguars is they were one of the NFL's best teams on the second and short metric. When they passed the football, they converted 76% of their second and short passes into first downs. I think more teams need to study the way that they were passing the ball in short yardage last season, because they were extremely efficient in converting first downs on that down and distance. However, when they ran the ball, they ranked dead last in the NFL in conversion rate. We mentioned the Patriots were, I think, what, at like 55% earlier in the podcast. Right. The Jacksonville Jaguars were dead last. They were at 25% of their handoffs on second and short resulted in first down. The NFL average, the average is 69%. So they hope that Chris Ivory is going to be that guy who's going to be able to turn in some of those second and short yardage runs into first downs. Everybody thinks that that should be the case. The problem is, with the Jets, he was actually the NFL's worst short yardage rusher. A lot of his other teammates were much better on short yardage runs with the Jets than he was. So I'm extremely interested to see what he's able to do this year in Jacksonville on second and short. That would help their offense stay on the field longer and allow them to have more potential to get down into the red zone and produce. I still think that they're going to be an exciting team from a fantasy perspective, but I don't know that I see them moving into first place in the AFC South yet this year, but I think that they're going to be a team to watch, a team on the rise, and somebody that could get there as long as Bortles plays at a high level, maybe next season.
One last team I'm going to ask you about here, Warren, and then I'm going to let you go, because, I mean, I could literally sit here and talk football with you all day long. Is there any hope at all for Cleveland, or should they just be making plans for that number one pick next season?
Well, the problem for there's some good and bad things about the Browns. I really like what they did with their coaching hire in Hugh Jackson. The players really seem to like him. They liked him in Cincinnati. I think he's going to bring some renewed enthusiasm and energy into Cleveland. And so hopefully that bodes a little bit better for the off-field things and then kind of the tone and positivity that the team could potentially have on the field. With that said, teams generally go as far as the quarterback is able to take them. Potentially the quarterback combined with a great defense and a good run game, if the quarterback's production just isn't there quite all the way. I think that this defense is still not nearly to that level where you could say we can rely on our defense and the quarterback can feel good about just going out there and being a game manager. I don't see them winning games that way. So the burden still is going to fall onto RG3, Josh McCown, to have much better production this season to help try to win them football games. I just don't know that right now they have the 32nd ranked offense in terms of the salary dollars allocated to the offensive side of the ball in 2016. They are spending the least of any team in the NFL this year on the offensive side of the ball. They do have some younger players there, and they're getting younger with, you know, Coleman out at wide receiver, who I think could be an immediate contributor. I like Duke Johnson from a fantasy perspective, catching passes out of the backfield in some of these games that get away from them. The only other positive I could say about this team right now is that I think in general, the AFC North is in, I don't want to call it a transition. It would be unfair to say that, but I think they've taken a step back from potentially where they were a couple of years ago when they were sending three teams to the playoffs. I think the Ravens with Mark Trestman are a little bit too pass happy and aren't quite as sound defensively, though I think Weddle should be a big improvement. The Cincinnati Bengals, obviously they lost to Jackson. Now a quarterback coach is coming on to call plays for that offense. And I think they're at their best when they run the football more. So how will he call plays this year? That's an unknown question. They lost some pieces out at wide receiver. So they've got a lot of targets to fill from other players and potentially younger players. So there's question marks there as well. I think the Steelers are the most slam dunk team that you think is probably pretty well rounded and isn't as much changed from what they were last year to this year. But so from that perspective, Cleveland might have a better shot than they would otherwise against the Ravens this year or against the Bengals this year. But I wouldn't go as far as to say they're a slam dunk to win the number one overall selection next year, but they're obviously projected to only win 4.5 to 5 games for a reason. They're underdogs in all 15 of their line games this year on average by a line of 6.5 points per game. So nearly a touchdown underdog in the majority of their games. Their schedule is not tremendously friendly to them. It's above average in terms of overall difficulty. So I do see a team here that is looking to the future, the way that they're building the team, and hopefully the fans there don't get too down on the quote-unquote analytics side of that front office and judge it just based upon this upcoming season. You know, that's a beef that I have. I think if all of a sudden the Green Bay Packers said we're using more analytics in what we're doing and they're winning all these games, then everybody would say, well, analytics really work. And if a horrible team like the Browns say that they're using it and the Browns still remain somewhat horrible, then everybody's going to say analytics don't work. And I don't think it's cut and dry like that. I think this front office needs more time, and I don't know that they're going to get there this season in terms of giving a really great on-field product for fans of Cleveland.
Warren, this is fantastic. Where can people find this book? Where can people find your work? Where can they hear you?
Well, it's easy to find the book. It's on Amazon.com. You can just look for Warren Sharp's 2016 football preview. The first weekend it was out, it was the Amazon bestseller in football that week. So that's where it is. You can find more of my work over at my website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can also buy the PDF version of the book over there in case you don't want the hard copy. But hopefully, as you can attest, it's kind of nice to have it in printed format just right in front of you to be able to leaf through it at your leisure. So those are pretty much the two places, though. During the season, of course, you'll find me over at ESPN writing and the chalk section, and you can also find me throughout the year over at Fox Sports and their Outkick the Coverage blog.
That's awesome. That is Warren Sharp. You can follow you on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
@SharpFootball.
@SharpFootball. There you go. That's Warren Sharp. Warren, we will definitely catch up with you again as the season goes on. You know, I fancy myself as an amateur handicapper. Basically, you do the opposite of what I tell you to do, and you'll make lots of money.
Well, it would be fun to catch up during the season. We can certainly talk about some of the lines and some of the value spots that I see teams having in the upcoming weeks.
All right, there's Warren Sharp, ladies and gentlemen. Go check out his website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. And of course, as he mentioned, you can get his book on amazon.com. Just search for Warren Sharp's 2016 football preview. And it's so full of stats. I mean, I could literally use this thing on every single show and just start popping stuff out. And we almost made it Patriots today. I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I talked to him a little bit more about his thoughts on the Raiders and the Jaguars. And, of course, is there any hope for the Cleveland Browns? You know, the one team I didn't talk to him about, though, was is there any hope for the San Francisco 49ers? Because we all know how much I'm down and hate the 49ers this season. Justin, I'm right on that, though, right?
Yeah. The Niners don't look like they're going to be very good. I mean, the one ray of hope for them, though, is that I think that at least on the defensive side of the ball, they've got more talent than Chip Kelly inherited when he went to Philadelphia. And so if he can coach up the offense, maybe they can do okay. But I'm really, really down on them. I think they're going to be a cellar dweller.
I agree AJ, wholeheartedly.
So is Number Fire in trouble for this upcoming season?
I think Number Fire is in some serious trouble. I think Warren might become a regular on the show. Might start using more of his statistics. I mean, he's got the playoff probabilities here for all the teams. Interestingly enough, Greg, Pittsburgh, right on the top.
Smart guy.
So, Don, I don't have much good news to tell you about the Ravens. Although, I will tell you, Warren's analytics have the Ravens doing much better than I think the Ravens will do this season. Got him right in the middle.
Yeah, Pod. How do you see the Ravens doing this season?
Not very good. I don't recall what my prediction was on them. I gotta go find my my off-season sheet here. Ah, here it is. The Baltimore Ravens this season 8-8. I'm very mediocre on the Ravens.
Yeah, man, I'm thinking like 9-7, maybe 10-6 myself, like competing for a wild card. And there just has to be a lot of variables for them to get there. You know, like obviously their pass rushers are older. They have to be healthy and be productive all year. You know, Flacco, I think Flacco will be fine, but the receiving core, you know, you have to have Steve Smith back. You have to have Perriman back. There's a lot of variables in there, a lot of moving pieces. I mean, yeah, I'm thinking like 9-7, 10-6 would be my ceiling for them this year.
All right, let's talk about some of the news going on in the NFL right now. And I mean, we are really scraping the barrel when our lead item here is the Steelers have cut Matt Spaeth. Greg, is this a huge loss for the team?
Well, it's kind of unexpected that it happened today. I mean, I guess he failed a physical, as Don let us know before the show. But the interesting part to me is LaDarius Green is still recovering from his offseason surgery, despite the fact that he was signed this offseason. And there's been some rumblings, minor ones, that he might not be ready for week one, you know, if he has a complication or if he's not going back on schedule. So that leaves us with Jesse James, last year's fourth round or fifth round draft pick, as a starting tight end. And he's actually pretty intriguing to me. He's pretty, you know, he can split out wide. He's a decent blocker. He's improving at blocking as he goes. So he could be a real difference maker, maybe even keep LaDarius Green on the bench if he gets 2-3 starts in a row and starts doing well. He has a pretty good rapport. He's like 6'6" or so. So he could be a red zone target. I just think it's an interesting thing that the Steelers tipped their hand so early, because Spaeth was kind of their security blanket to make sure they had a solid tight end that knew the playbook and knew how to execute it. So, I mean, he is at the end of his career, so it's not totally shocking, but it definitely opens the door for Jesse James to have a big year.
Yeah, I don't want to say that Spaeth is a nobody, but when you sent out the message saying that he was out with knee surgery, I assumed we were talking about the golfer, because that's literally the only one I've ever heard of.
He did have like a 10-year career. I mean, come on.
You're right, to be fair, I'm an actual nobody.
So the next step I have on my list, Arian Foster ends up signing with the Miami Dolphins. Currently, I'm looking at a depth chart for the Dolphins on ESPN.com. They have J.I. Listed as their current starter. I mean, do we think this is just competition, or do we think Foster is actually going to become the lead back for Miami?
I think there's a 45% chance that he's going to be the lead back. I mean, what has that rookie from last year did, J.H.I.? He did it in a short sample set and a short sample size. So, I mean, Arian Foster still probably does have one more season left in him. And it is the Dolphins. It's not like they're expecting Ricky Williams to be type of season out of the guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well Foster runs anymore, but I'm sure he's still terrific catching the ball. Even if one or the other is the starter, it's going to be a split at most, maybe even the lion's share of the violent pounding to the young guy. I think it's a good move. I think Foster, as long as you manage his carries and don't get him injured too early, he can be a positive contributor.
I mean, Don, you're a team that perhaps was in the looking for a backup running back of some sorts. Arian Foster, would you have preferred to see him in a Ravens uniform?
No, I mean, a 30-year-old back coming off a torn Achilles. And he's had the history of soft tissue injuries, you know, over the years. Like, I mean, my theory is, I mean, they seem like they got him at a good price. I think it's about $1.5 million. And then it can get up to $3 million, I believe, in incentives. But I believe if they cut him before the start of the season, they only owe him his signing bonus, which was $400,000. I mean, it'd be fine to kick the tires and see what he can do. I mean, it's clear that they don't believe in Jay Ajayi. You know, otherwise, they would just let, you know, maybe get like a cheaper or maybe a younger back in there to help him out. But I don't being that age for a running back and coming off an Achilles, I think he's going to be a change of pace back. And Like you were saying earlier, he may bring some pass catching there, but I don't expect him to take over, 60-70% workload.
Yeah, I'm of the same thought, Don. When I heard Arian Foster signed Miami, I yawned. I'm really not that impressed by the signing. It doesn't seem like it's going to make that big a difference.
We shouldn't be surprised, though. Isn't Florida where you go when you get really old?
That's a good point. That's a good
true.
Point, Justin.
Time to retire.
Justin, making a claim to get in the opening tees. Good job. Next up, speaking of Ricky Williams, or at least things related to Ricky Williams, Josh Gordon met with Roger Goodell, apparently, on his reinstatement. He can reapply for reinstatement to the league on August 1st. Now, he apparently tried to do this in April, and while he didn't necessarily fail a test, they did find that his samples were diluted, whatever the heck that means. Ultimately, he still has a chance to see the field this season. I say if Tom Brady is going to miss four games this season, Josh Gordon should not have one toe on a football field, at least not until the second half.
I don't disagree. I have nothing to say about a Brown.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
I'm so sick of Josh Gordon. He had one really good year several years ago. I get that he's young, but he hasn't even played football in a few years. What makes us believe that he can contribute anything at full speed on a field anymore?
And as Greg mentioned when we were talking about this earlier, he is only 25, which is crazy that we haven't seen him in so many years, and he's only 25. I will say, and I'll bring this back, because this is a topic, Greg, that you once brought up during the offseason, he's being kept off the field because of marijuana. In certain states now, marijuana is actually legal. And so perhaps this is another topic here that we need to investigate when talking about the NFL and their drug policy. Like, where should marijuana fall? Like, obviously, it's clearly written in black and white right now that marijuana is not a drug that you should be using, and thus Gordon should not be using it. However, is that something that the NFL should reconsider?
See, I got an interesting take on this from an HR perspective. I was actually just at a wellness convention where one of the hospitals here in Cleveland is actually denying employment to anybody who has tobacco come up in their blood tests when they go for their drug tests.
Wow.
And just something as conservative as tobacco, because that's their mission statement, that they believe that tobacco causes, lung cancer. So therefore, to be healthy, they do not believe in employing people that smoke. And that they don't do it to people who are currently employed, but when they get into the league, or not into the league, but into employment, it's a gateway test to get in. So with that viewpoint, I mean, it's a hospital group. I think they have some credence to stand on. I mean, if the NFL wants to have a good image and thinks that marijuana isn't something that should be used and that's their credence for going forward, that's fine. But they should come out and say that, too. They shouldn't just, keep going with the norms just because it's illegal. That's fine, too. I mean, but just say clearly why you're for it. Don't keep changing the rules for Josh Gordon, because they did change the rules for him. They increased the limits at one point so he could play 10 or 6 games in 1 year. So, I mean, I have no problem with just an employer saying you can't do this, or you can't be work in my league, or you can't work at my job. It's just an interesting trend that's going on, and it's not just in football. I mean, this hospital group was doing it.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And as somebody who lives in one of the states where it is legal, I should also point out that while it is legal in some states individually, it is still federally illegal. So you are technically breaking a federal law if you light up in the state of Washington, for example. The federal government has come out and said that they're not going to enforce it, but that doesn't change the fact that it is still illegal nationwide. It's kind of a weird gray area that way.
It's going to be an interesting time for the NFL, and there was another story about one of their chief medical advisors has retired. I'm not going to get into that story because, as was mentioned in one of the last episodes, we're just a bunch of schmucks who may or may not know a little bit about football. I'm not going to get into the whole politics and the entire medical field of what's happening to football players because I don't know. And until I bring somebody on who does, I don't feel it's our place to really have an in-depth conversation about that. Plus, I don't feel that that's the sort of thing our fans really want to listen to. I do think they want to hear about our thoughts on a couple of guys that decided to say, see you later, alligator. You can tell I spend way too much time with my kids. Peanut Tillman and Eugene Monroe both have retired since our last podcast. Eugene Monroe retiring rather early. Peanut Tillman, I feel, though, has had quite a full career. Probably not a Hall of Famer, but he was pretty good, that's for sure.
I think Peanut Tillman was a really good player. You know, he's one of those guys on the list of very good. And the best thing about his announcement is how he did it. His little video that he must have spent a few hours, directing himself and putting together snippets was pretty hilarious. So I enjoyed that. That's the second best retirement video of the year. I still got to put Jared Allen's number one.
You know, several years ago, I went to the Ed Block Courage Awards here in Maryland, and Peanut Tillman was the Bears representative that year. It was very interesting hearing his story. And he had a young child, I believe, that had heart problems, and just overcoming the adversity, not only, you know, as a player himself, just being a smaller guy, but just in life in general. You look at like the defensive backs for his time. The stat that really stands out is all the forced fumbles that he has. And that was really highlighted, towards the end of his career. So it seemed like a good guy on and off the field and a good player for the Bears. And he had a good long career. So, happy trails to him.
And let's say hello to a new player, Ezekiel Elliott, apparently has sold more jerseys than any other NFL player so far to date. He narrowly beat out, but he did beat out New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. And then it was Odell Beckham Jr., Cam Newton, Rob Gronkowski, and Carson Wentz comes up in sixth for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I sort of understand that you're a rookie, high expectations. So all those guys got to go out and buy those jerseys because they're brand new jerseys. But really, Carson Wentz? Is Philadelphia, they better not bench Carson Wentz to start the season. He's got too many fans already.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least part of that has to be the fact that I'm sure there's already plenty of people who have Tom Brady jerseys who didn't buy a new one. Whereas like Ezekiel Elliott, people had to buy those fresh. In terms of Carson Wentz, yeah, that one kind of surprises me. That's not as, nationwide a market as like the Cowboys are.
I was really surprised to hear that he had number six. Ezekiel Elliott, there's so much hype on him, obviously, going into the season. I'm not really too shocked by that. It's definitely interesting to see Wentz at six. I'm sure after the Philly fans watch Bradford, play like he does for the first couple of games, I'm sure the Boo Birds will be out very quickly. They'll be ready for him.
I was a guest on the Fantasy Life OG podcast recently, and I mentioned, all this hype on Ezekiel Elliott. I think it's a little misplaced. I mean, we're putting a lot of expectation on a rookie. When you had a guy in Darren McFadden who actually played pretty darn well for the Cowboys last season, why would they just, all right, you know what, Darren, thanks. Thanks, Run DMC. You're good. We're just going to give the ball to the rookie over here. I don't necessarily see it that way. I see there being a little bit more of a split. And this, ladies and gentlemen, brings us to our fantasy segment. And we'll probably have a fantasy football related guest on next week, to talk a little bit more about fantasy. I'm not as big a believer in Ezekiel Elliott as others are, but Greg, I know you have some fantasy football related information for us.
Well, just on Zeke, he scares me just because of the Trent Richardson factor. I think Trent Richardson's going to make everyone gun shy for the rest of the time when we play fantasy football. And Darren McFadden, I mean, I understand that you think he's going to be there, but he broke his arm already. Like, didn't he break his shoulder or his elbow or something already? Like,
that's just. That wouldn't surprise me if he did.
McFadden had something like where like he dropped his phone and some ridiculous accident at home where he fractured his elbow. He's going to be out for a little while.
Oh, great.
Yeah, there's even like crazy scenarios where they're talking about him not making the team because they have Alfred Morris and Dunbar with Zeke. Do they need McFadden? So,
well, even then, look at Alfred Morris.
I agree. Like,
there's too many guys there to share the ball with that Ezekiel Elliott is just going to take the ball and run with it all four downs.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, there's no reason to run him into the ground in his rookie year. You've got some veteran backs there that'll just share the load with him.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget about Alfred Morris. Jay, I'm going to disagree with you. I think that Darren McFadden is a bad football player. He was a bad football player last year who was in a situation where you can look pretty good as a bad football player. I think that getting just competent running back play is going to make a huge, huge difference for them back there. Between that and Alfred Morris, I don't see any reason to even keep Darren McFadden on that roster anymore.
Well, Run DMC, you have a place up in New England, and especially if the talk of LeGarrette Blount not making the team is true, then there's a spot open for you. But Greg, you have some information here about the next Fan Up Fantasy League.
Yeah, so we are doing a Dynasty Fantasy League this year, and it's going to be a crazy 16-team league, so it's going to be pretty deep. We have an interesting kicker to start the thing off where we first determine the draft order by current ADP of the best player on each team. So for example, the Giants fan, super fan Samuel has the first pick in our draft because Odell Beckham was the top rated player. And then another thing the group wanted to do was they wanted to have some type of requirement that you had to have a player on your roster from the team you represent for the podcast. So the first round pick must be a player off your roster, but you can choose. And the majority of the guys had pretty easy choices, like our Houston fan, he took DeAndre Hopkins, and Tim from Atlanta took Julio Jones. The interesting wrinkle was the guys like our Chiefs fan, Nick, he had a really difficult decision. He had nobody that was really worth a first round pick to take. And it was an interesting decision for him because he is a big fanboy for Jamal Charles.
I was about to say.
He was going to have to pick between Jamal Charles and Macklin. He had a really tough time with it. So the most interesting one to go off of this a little bit was Ezekiel Elliott versus Dez Bryant for Brian, our Cowboys superfan. Do you go with the stud running back to start your dynasty league, or do you go with your proven stud wide receiver? And knowing that because it's 16 teams and we're going in a snake draft, that he's not going to have a chance at Dez on the back end or Ezekiel Elliott, either one.
It's pretty easy. You go with Dez Bryant. You go with the proven commodity over potential. Dick Vitale used to say it all the time. Potential gets you fired, baby. You do not draft on potential, people. Telling you this right now, you draft on proven commodities, Dez Bryant. And in terms of the Chiefs, that also is a no-brainer. You take Jamal Charles. It's not even close. Jamal Charles versus Jeremy Maclin. Are you kidding me? Oh my God. I need to be in this league so that I can crush you guys like grapes.
Yeah, Jay, it's not close. An aging, oft-injured running back in a dynasty league is something that honestly doesn't have a ton of value. I think if you pulled up his average draft position, you would be shocked by how low it is in this kind of situation.
Yeah, Jamal Charles on ADP for this dynasty, it was not in the top 50.
But the wrinkle is that you have to have a player that's on your team. And if I have to consider that wrinkle to start with, it's Jamal Charles to me. I don't care that it's a dynasty league. I will end up getting other players that will fill out the rest of my team. you know, Jamaal Charles retires at the end of the season, I get another, then I get another Chiefs player next year. Yeah, to me, it's Jamaal Charles. And then you have one of your running backs. And for the Cowboys fan, it's Dez Bryant. You don't worry about your running backs at this point, because Dez Bryant's going to be scoring too many points for you even to worry about the running back position.
Wow.
You're in a deep league. If you get that advantage at that one position, you can rest a little bit on some of the other positions. You know, for instance, if I was in this league and I was forced to take the Patriots, I'm going to take Gronkowski, and I'm probably going to try and get as many running backs as I possibly can, because Gronk is going to give me that much of an advantage at the tight end position.
Well, yeah, you have to take Gronk in that situation. But what's interesting about Elliott, in my opinion, for the Cowboys is, who are your top running backs in the entire league right now for fantasy purposes? What is it, like Gurley, Peterson?
Gurley, Le'Veon Bell.
Peterson, and then who?
See, yeah, I'm worried. Really, so actually, thank you for reminding me of Le'Veon Bell. I'm more interested in what you chose, Greg, Le'Veon Bell or Antonio Brown?
Well, I absolutely took Antonio Brown because I cannot trust Le'Veon Bell. I actually have a dynasty league where I own both of them since forever. And, you know, how can you go wrong with Antonio Brown? Sign me up for his automatic 15 points every week. I mean,
yeah, in a dynasty league, it's all about receivers to me. I mean, receivers are going to have the longer careers. You know, they should be less injury prone too. That's always my theory, especially if it's a PPR league.
Which it is.
That I would go things too.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, Le'Veon Bell is obviously really good, but I mean, I have Antonio Brown in my main dynasty league, and he's been a godsend. He's the best. As much as I hate the Steelers, I mean, you can't go wrong with Antonio Brown on your team. You just can't.
Don, who's your guy if you're in this league?
Oof. I don't know. If I had to choose someone in the first round, I guess if it's a dynasty league, I'm as weird as it sounds, I may have to go Rashad Perriman just for the long-term aspect of it. Yeah. I mean, Flacco's going to be, you know, what, a top 16 fantasy quarterback. Steve Smith is one more year left. Forsett has another year left in Baltimore, and he's gone. I mean, yeah, it's not a good situation, but it's either that or maybe Kenneth Dixon banking on the fact that he's going to take over as the bell cow. But yeah, that's not a good way of players to choose from in that situation.
It's Joe Flacco. I can't believe you'd be taking those kind of players in the first round. You have to take a proven commodity in the first round.
No, this is an interesting one for Justin, right? Because Justin actually happened to have, of his Seahawks, he actually happened to have three guys in ADP that were relatively close within 10 players, but none of them were in the top 45 players. So, and they were, I think, Tyler Lockett, Doug Baldwin, and Russell Wilson. And Thomas Rawls was somewhere farther down the list. Now, because he had the worst, you know, the worst highest player in Tyler Lockett, he also gets the first pick of the second round. So he's actually still hasn't chosen his guys. And I'm fascinated what he's going to do around this first turn. Because which Seahawk does he go with? And does that play into who he's going to take at 201?
Like, because you essentially have Rawls, the first pick in the draft here, Justin.
Yeah,
I have two consecutive picks, and because of the way that this breaks down, where everybody has to pick one player off their team, there is like top 12 talent from other teams that's still out there because of it. So like, I could take both the Seahawks I like. I could take one Seahawk I like, and then one really really good player from another team. I have no freaking idea.
Yeah, it's Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that's what I would go with. Yeah, Russell Wilson, and then figured out from there. I mean, the only reason I wouldn't choose Flacco is because I think I could find either a guy, you know, draft a quarterback that will play as good or better than him, or maybe find one on the, you know, free agent list. But yeah, Russell Wilson's the guy you should choose, no question.
Look at this. Don's been on the podcast for two shows. Now he's telling me what to do. So that's how it's going to be done, huh?
By the way, Don may have only been on this show for two shows, but you can go back and listen to all of our shows, including our preseason division previews. Every single division was previewed through the month of June. So if you missed it, you can catch it on iTunes. And when you're on iTunes, you can subscribe to our show. Leave us a rating like Raider Rodney here did. He says, Pod is the man despite his homerism. Pod was always one of the best parts of the ESPN Football Today podcast. He even carried the ship late with some subpar hosts. Now with the next fan up, he is the man in charge, and he has brought in some great super fans and does an outstanding job despite his homerism of the Cheatriots. Go Raiders. Well, guess that was mostly positive.
Thanks.
I'll take it. Despite my homerism, by the way, at least I wear my homerism as a badge. So you know right from the get-go that if you say anything bad about the Patriots, you'll never be on the show again, just like Andrew, our Jets superfan.
So, Jay, I got one more for you. This one was surprising to you because I thought there was a slam dunk. Chris, our Saints fan, had to choose his player. Now he's at spot 11, so he'll pick again at 22. So he has really the sixth pick in the draft after he picks this guy. Mm. Now, I think the obvious options are Brandon Cooks, Michael Thomas, Drew Brees. I guess we'll throw in Kobe Fleener.
Yeah, I'm going with Drew Brees.
Wow.
One of those ones.
Really?
I am a points is points kind of guy. Drew Brees is going to give me points. And if I got the sixth pick, there's a chance I could still get Brandon Cooks. If I really wanted him, I ended up getting Brandon Cooks in the SFB. I forget the name of the league. It's the SFB 480 Scott Fish, the Scott Fish Bowl. I'm in one of those leagues. I got Brandon Cooks. He was my first wide receiver he was my third wide receiver. And I even mentioned, I was like, I think I'm the one that's getting cooked in this league. Cause I did not do very well.
So you'd rather
need to learn more about Dynasty, man. I could probably recommend a good Dynasty podcast for you if you need one.
Well, listen, there's plenty of Dynasty. There's plenty of fantasy podcasts out there for you. Harris Football, Christopher Harris, who, of course, as I mentioned, will probably have a fantasy football segment next week, is most likely going to be the lead. He's the leader in the clubhouse at the current time for being our fantasy football guest next week. Is definitely one that I would recommend. And of course, there's plenty others. Dynasty Blueprint with Matt Williamson, for crying out loud. What am I thinking?
Matt Williamson.
Talk about a dynasty podcast. Yes, I would. There's plenty to recommend. But what's the problem with Drew Brees? Points is points, people. I want to win, and I want to win this year. I don't care about next year. I'll worry about next year.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, they have a word for that. That's called redraft. Welcome to Dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, Dynasty, you got to think long term. You want to get, as young as you can. Drew Brees will have another. He has one more year left in New Orleans. He didn't re-sign with them, right?
No, he doesn't have a long term contract at the current.
Yeah,
time.
I mean, plus he's getting older. He's a little bit more banged up. I mean, Cooks would be my selection just based on what he's done and being able to do his first 2 years. You got to think long term on it. Cooks will be around for a lot longer than Brees will.
You guys are missing the point. You need to win and win now. I'll win this year and I'll lose next year. I don't care about next year because I'll.
Jay, I get that you are a Patriots fan and you're used to winning now and winning next year and winning next year, but you can't cheat in Dynasty. So you have to actually plan things out.
There's no cheating involved. It's all about winning now, baby. Win now, baby.
So hold on. So just so you get a feel for how crazy they are, okay, these Dynasty players, which I'm one of, Tom Shannon our Bears fan, had to decide between Jeffrey and Kevin White, and their ADPs were 17 and 18, respectively. As in, people were taking Kevin White almost at the same spot they were taking, Jeffrey. It's just bonkers. This is a different
thing. And how many snaps in the NFL has Kevin White taken?
The same as us.
Oh, wow. Well, apparently I'm a different animal, and that's what would allow me to win in all your dynasty leagues. Because while you all follow the goats and do the exact same thing, little lemmings jumping off your cliff, I'm doing the different thing. Oh, where did I learn that from? The Patriots. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. We gave you a little bit of everything in today's show. We gave you analytics. We gave you fantasy. We gave you news. We gave you retirement. We gave you business. We almost even went to the medical route. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave a review. Share with your friends. Let everyone know that we're here and we'll be here for you twice a week. At least twice a week. There's some discussion of maybe even expanding, but that's for down the line. But for right now, twice a week, Thursdays and Sundays. I'll be here on Thursdays, and we'll have a super fan ready for you on Sundays. I believe either Andrew or Nick, those two, will fight it out, duke it out to see who will lead the group on Sunday evenings. We want to hear from you. nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast on Twitter. And of course, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Or you just search Next Fan Up when you're on Facebook. Our page shows right up. And right now we have so many things on our Facebook page. All of our podcasts are obviously there. Our division previews, our top 10 lists, which is one of the reasons Don became our Baltimore Ravens super fan, is he submitted a top 10 list for the Ravens to us, which was fantastic. All of those are on our Facebook page. And we actually posted last week our conversation from our Slack group about Deflategate. So we didn't mention, we made a lot of jokes and references to Deflategate, but we did not actually talk about it here today. You can go to our Facebook page, check out our conversation, and interact with us on Facebook. We love interacting with everyone any way that we possibly can. So for our guest, Warren Sharp, for Greg, for Don, and for Justin, I am merely Pod Vader. The guy coming up is Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.